Blog Talk Radio.
Howdy, race fans. How the hell are you? Steve Billmeyer here with another edition of Racing with Big Sweat. Glad y'all are tuning in. Hope you enjoy tonight's show. We've got two outstanding asphalt drivers here with us tonight. We're going to talk with, and we'll be glad to take your questions or comments. Just dial in on 718-664-9861. Not bad pronunciation for a redneck, huh? Give us a call if you got a question or you want to speak to either one of our drivers, and we'll carry on. While I got a moment, let me introduce my partner in crime, the man who puts this show on for me and does an excellent job of it, Mr. CJ Sports. How are we tonight, CJ? That good, huh? Oh, well, CJ must be out somewhere else. Well, I don't have any sign that anybody's called in yet, so I'm just going to hang out here for a minute or two and see what happens next. I don't even know if I'm talking to myself or anybody else, but well, at least I got a message saying I'm being heard, so I haven't seen where our first guest is called in yet, so we'll take a moment and talk about what happened this weekend at Kansas.
There we go. And it finally let me in.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio.
I had to do it on my phone tonight, and for some reason my phone wasn't uploading the studio quick enough, and it just kept showing you. It didn't show me in there, and now it's finally got me in there. So, and I got my eyes on the studio, so we good. But just glad to be here tonight. Glad to had the last few nights off due to technical issues we had at my end, and just glad to be back on the radio tonight and be able to listen to two great guests. As you've had Cody on the show before, and then Brandon, I've had him over on the 110 Nation a couple times, and you got to make sure tonight you ask him his most embarrassing moment. The Racing with Big Sweat fans need to hear this. I was laughing so hard when he told me this story, so I definitely want to let the fans on this side of the 110 Nation Sports Radio Network get to hear that story. It's a very entertaining story.
Well, I'm just waiting on Cody to call in, and we're definitely going to ask him about that. I want to ask him what happened to his Tiger Stripe paint job. You know, that was pretty unique. Made the car easy to follow while it was out on the track, and I always thought it was pretty cool.
No, so the most embarrassing moment, that's on Brandon. Ask Brandon that.
Okay.
But yeah, Brandon's got a good story on one of his most embarrassing moments. So
that would be our other guest tonight, Brandon Martin. He's going to join us about 9:30, or maybe earlier if Cody doesn't call in yet. But
I believe we got him in the studio. I'm double checking right now. No, that's a different zip code. Okay, that's not. Yeah, that's not him. Okay. I just knew we had someone calling into the studio. So I want to welcome those that have called in. As a matter of fact, I think that might be Mike. I do want to thank those that are in the studio listening to the show tonight. Glad to have you guys hanging out tonight.
And trust me, we're usually a lot better show than it's gone so far tonight. It's been unusual, to say the least. So what you got going on, CJ? Anything new?
Nah, other than Friday nights, we got the Hot Lap with Stats. Mike, your old co-host, he is going to have a show on Friday nights. Gives me an opportunity to not have to concentrate on a show, just be able to produce like I do with your show in the Dirt Talk Hour, get more family time that way because I don't have to focus so much on it. And with me being in and out on Friday nights, it's a really big relief for me on my end. So got that going on and just glad to be back on the air. Like I said, we were off the last few nights due to having to take care of things and the old lady in between jobs. So my funds had to go in other directions, more of a necessity versus the phone and other things. So those are luxury items in my book. So had got everything taken care of today to get back on that. So just glad to be sitting here and be back to talk to sports. Like it's just been like 4 or 5 days and it's just, I'm just glad to be back.
I know what you mean. It kills me during the off season to sit around and not be able to talk about racing, but oh well, that's the way it goes, you know. What did you take away from the Kansas race this weekend?
The only two things I took away, and this is real bad for me, but the only two things I took away from this race, one, Joe Gibbs Racing once again, and two, that's all I could take away from it because my schedule normally at work is normally I open one day a week, and it's either a Saturday or a Sunday morning. The other morning is an early morning, but I don't normally have to open. Well, my boss lady, her man came back into town after a couple years of being out of town, and so I had opened Friday, Saturday, and Sunday morning. So about 7 o'clock yeah. Saturday night, Mr. CJ Sports was done for the night. I passed out about 7 o'clock and didn't wake up until about 4:30 the next morning. I got some good rest. So I missed everything from when the sun was starting to go down until the sun started coming up the next day.
Trust me, I've had days like that myself. I'd stay awake for about the first 5 laps and then luckily wake up for the last 5 laps and just sleep all the way through the rest of the race.
Yeah, I was definitely hurting. So,
I know what you mean.
Well, I did see one headline, and I thought it was interesting. The Lug Nuts and Kyle Busch, how many Lug Nuts did they not get on there? And I just thought it was interesting. And wonder if that changed the thinking of any of the drivers. Everybody was all gung-ho. Yes, Tony Stewart's right. Yes, you know, all the drivers had his back. Now that we see a team get penalized for it, does that change the opinions of drivers? Well, maybe this wasn't such a great idea to jump on board on this because now we're about to lose our crew chief. We're about to be fined. We're about this. We're about that. So I'm kind of curious, does that change the opinions of any of the drivers now that we're starting to see drivers get hit for this?
I don't think so. I think it'll more change the engineer and crew chief's opinion of it, though. They've got to be a lot more careful now. I saw a picture posted, somebody else posted it in my group, NASCAR and Other Racing, but it showed the right side of the car in Victory Lane, and you could see that on one of the studs on each wheel, the lug nut was on there, but it wasn't tight. It hadn't been turned or anything. It was just, you know, stuck on there. So, you know, by the letter of the rule, that's okay. It just says you have to have 5 lugs on there. It doesn't say they have to be tight. So, but obviously NASCAR didn't see it that way. And I've heard that a couple of other ways they're trying to get around this deal, I forgot who it was, they said, had it at Kansas, but they had machined all the threads out of the lug nut. In that way, they didn't have to tighten it. It would just slide all the way down the stud and be up against the wheel.
Wow.
And another one I heard is they'll machine half of the threads out of the lug so it saves a second because the lug doesn't have to turn and torque that much.
But on paper,
that'll work because with that hard a nut and stud, theoretically one thread will hold the weight that it's stamped at. So, you know, all you got to do really on paper is just get one thread tight and go on to the next one. But they're, from what I've heard, some of them are working on machining out the half of the threads, and that way, you know, they don't have to turn the lug so much, and it speeds up. You're talking about hundredths of a second, maybe a tenth of a second. But, you know, that might be the difference in getting out in the lead and coming out in second off pit road.
Now,
I don't know.
You,
I think
you'll know this a little bit more than I would. Now speaking of maybe not the ones that are halfway threaded, but the ones that they go ahead and do the whole lug nut, and it just slides on. Does that Loctite stuff, would that hold that through a whole run if they, you know, hollowed out the whole center of it and was just relying on that Loctite stuff to hold it?
Yeah, if you put enough in there to so it makes contact between the stud and the inside of the nut, they put Loctite in, or we always did anyway, we put Loctite in all the lug nuts when we lug the tires up, and so it goes on the thread. We put a little Loctite on there, and I can't think of the lube we'd use on there. I just can't think of it now. I can see it in my head. It's silver colored, but you know, we would do that to keep the threads cleaned and try not to jam up a lug nut or cross thread a lug nut. So something as small as a lug nut, there's a lot of ingenuity going into that.
I didn't know how hold that or how good that stuff holds, and I'm just sitting there thinking to myself, the G forces and the vibration and even the beating and the banging of the cars, how much a lug nut that's been hollowed out, how much that Loctite stuff could actually hold. Because I just, if they can handle all that, then that's fine. But I'm just sitting there thinking the reward versus risk and the penalties and the fines that come with it, if hollowing the whole thing out is really worth it, if there's a possibility that any one of those combinations could help that, you know, that lug nut come off and you get caught at the end without, you know, that lug nut. So I that's just kind of why I was curious, because it just seems that either that's some really good stuff or that's a big risk, one or the other.
You'd almost have to use super glue, because Loctite takes a little while to set, and with the centrifugal force, it's all, everything shifts to the right, and it seems like to me that would throw that lug nut off on the right side if you did it, because that's the way all the weight's going to travel and everything. Everything's going to go to the right. So I'm sure they got engineers to figure this out, and we'll see what they come up with. It'll be pretty interesting, the next one that gets caught, and I'm sure sooner or later somebody's going to get caught. Everybody's trying to beat the system now.
Now that we're back to a skill track, and what I mean by a skill track, Talladega to me was a wild card. Like, I'm not going to say it don't take skill to win at Talladega, but I think it takes more luck and having the right drafting partner more than skill. Like, Kansas is more of a skill track. Bristol is more of a skill track. The super speedways to me are just tracks that are just of luck for the most part. But it's interesting, we get back to the tracks that take a little bit more skill, and here we find Joe Gibbs Racing once again back in victory lane. It's like, we got a week off. We watched Brad Keselowski happen to be out front when that caution came out, because there was a good chance that Kyle Busch could have won that race. But and then we come back to a skill track, and here we watch Joe Gibbs Racing do basically where they left off a couple weeks prior to that. And I just thought that was interesting. I'm waiting for somebody to step up. There's got to be either a manufacturer or a team that's got to step up and give Joe Gibbs Racing some kind of challenge. Like, I know that the chase and everything kind of changes up, because we were talking the same thing going into last year's chase, and we honestly thought that, you know, there was a possibility we could see all four Joe Gibbs Racing cars in the final four. That's how strong they were looking. And I know, you know, we still ended up with Joe Gibbs Racing car to win the championship, but at the same time, the chase kind of, you know, kind of factors in a little bit because you start eliminating people out of there. This week to week, watching Joe Gibbs Racing be out front, it gets so repetitive. And, you know, there's a lot of things that have turned the fans away from the sport, and a lot of it's not NASCAR's doing. A lot of it's just the fans don't like change and the fans don't like this. But having the same team win every single week, that will kind of start turning fans off. So somebody's got to start stepping up. Somebody's got to do it.
Oh, yeah. You know, when I was a kid following NASCAR, I didn't like Richard Petty because he won all the time. And that carries right on into Earnhardt in his later years, Jeff Gordon because he won a lot, Darrell Waltrip because he won a lot. It's just the way race fans are, and then usually something happens right at the end of their career to turn racing public opinion around, and suddenly they're great guys and everything. So, you know, it's just something else you deal with. I mean, Joe Gibbs has got something, and he's got something that the others don't have, and it's not like Joe Gibbs Racing hadn't been caught for creative engineering, shall we say, before. I remember a few years back they went to Daytona, and somebody ratted on them, somebody told. But NASCAR checked their oil pans. And oil pan is, you know, stamp steel, weighs maybe 3-4 pounds. Well, you couldn't pick Joe Gibbs's oil pans up with one hand. They weighed like 70 pounds because they had lead in them. And that put that lead, that ballast that you want, right in the center, right between the two front tires, the best, you know, one of the best places you could put it. So, and, you know, the rules didn't say that that was illegal or anything. There was, you know, nothing much on the oil pan, but they used to call it against the letter of the law.
I would be curious. I would love to be the fly on the wall to know which person told on themselves, because outside of your drivers and your crew, like, who else would know? It's not like Brad Keselowski just randomly goes underneath other drivers' cars and sees their oil pan. So that has got to be something that somebody let slip out and release that information. And I would love to know which employee or ex-employee at this point was the one that did that. Because, some things I'm a firm believer. In-house stuff stays in-house. And I would like to be the fly on the wall who let that cat out the bag.
Yeah, back in the day when I was racing, the common thing to do at night, you know, you knew all these crew guys and everything because you were around them all the time. Well, we generally, because we didn't have any transportation, would go down to the motel bar and sit in there and drink at night and hang out with other guys you were friends with and everything, not necessarily just hang out with your teammates. But then you know how it is. Get a few beers at them, and they might want to brag a little bit or something, or impress people with what they know, and somebody will let that slip out. And that's it. You know, that's all it takes is something like that. I've been guilty of that myself because I was a tire man. I would buy the Goodyear engineers that were in the bar beers all night long, sitting around and talk with them and just kind of pick their brain and try to get some little bit of information from them. So, you know, I know how it works, and like they say, loose lips sink ships.
How did Saturday's night race go? Was it a dominant race by Kyle Busch? And obviously, because I did see the picture of his car, and it was pretty banged up, so obviously arrow was not a big issue at Kansas. From what I gathered, information I did get, it was all about track position, and we was finally back to a race that track position played a key factor into it. Was that the case?
Yeah. Track position was key to that race, really. I was just talking about Goodyear. Well, Goodyear, I think, brought too hard a tire there because it was evident early on that your times, your lap times, didn't fall off that much as your tires wore. New tires were still an advantage, but not a big advantage against somebody that can use tires. And Kyle Busch proved that. Adam Stevens kept him out on the last caution and didn't pit for tires. I forget how many laps he had on his tires, but there were other cars that did pit for tires, but they couldn't catch him. So I'm sure, you know, from what I understand, Goodyear is really engineering tire testing. You know, they just tested on the freshly paved track at Watkins Glen. I don't remember if it was early this week or late last week, but it must have been early this week. But they're testing there. They're testing everywhere they can. The engineers are working. They're trying to come up with the right tire to match up with this low downforce package and what the drivers want. The drivers want tires that'll wear, and that allows them to drive the car more, where they're not so aero-dependent. And that was a problem at Kansas. You just couldn't pass. You could catch the car in front of you, but you just couldn't pass him. You just didn't have that extra to get by him. So it'll be interesting to see what happens when they go back to Kansas later on in the year. I would imagine Goodyear will bring a different tire for that.
I would imagine so as well. And tip our hats to Goodyear. So, I mean, I know there's been a lot of years. There's been a lot of races. We could say a lot of bad things. I can still remember the Brickyard. I think that they can only go like 10 laps at a time before a tire would blow. I was like 10 lap heat races, and Jimmy Johnson ended up winning the race. So there's a lot of bad things you could say about Goodyear over the years. The way that they've worked hard with NASCAR, especially with this new downforce package, and to only really miss one track so far with the tires that they have brought, especially since I think we got into this package, what, July? I think Kentucky last year, if I'm mistaken, when they first brought that package out. I got to say, Goodyear's done a really good job of giving us the product that the drivers and the fans really want.
Yeah, and another thing to keep in mind is the age of the asphalt at Kansas, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's been, I want to say October, but I don't think they run in October. Anyway, it's been from back in the fall. The track is set out in the winter all year, and it ages the asphalt. And, of course, the combination of the age of the asphalt and the low downforce package is going to put a premium on grip. And that's the thing. Over the years, Goodyear has proven time and time again that they're doing everything they can to bring a safe but good racing tire to the track every race, and they very seldom miss, but sometimes they do. And the good thing for the teams is they can get into it is getting that extra practice time at a track. You know, the guys that were testing at Watkins Glen, they got to try out new stuff. We used to do that all the time. Harry Hyde was big on going to do tire tests, and we did. He volunteered us for every tire test Goodyear had, because they pretty much had to beat people to get them to go do tire tests. Nobody wanted to mess with, you know, take the time out of their week to go do that. And Harry realized early on, you know, you go do a tire test, and hell, you're done with tires by 1 o'clock, and they're not going to close the track till 5. So So you got 4 hours where you can work on your setup and everything for when you come back. And I think now people have realized that where they didn't realize that back in the day. So it kind of puts a premium on that too. So I agree with you. Everything that Goodyear's doing is in the right direction, and you know, they really deserve a pat on the back.
Even if you guys wouldn't have got the 4 hours or so roughly between when the Goodyear testing was done and the track was done, the testing that you did to up till that point, would that still been enough? Say you didn't get that extra 4 hours, you only got the testing that Goodyear set up and got a run that time. Wasn't there enough information gathered from that would have been worth it anyway as well? Or was it only really beneficial to you guys to do it if you guys got that extra time to go out there and test as well?
No, because the tires that they're testing, they're going to decide which tire they're going to bring. So we already know how the car is going to react on those type of tires. The advantage to having that extra time in the afternoon is trying different setups, changing springs and shocks and sway bars to see if that improves things anymore. That's, you know, the big thing about crew chiefs. They don't sit on what they know. They're always trying to find that little bit extra. So you take advantage of any time you can get. And, you know, for us to get that afternoon, you know, you could run through a lot of different setup changes in 4 hours or so. So it's definitely an advantage that way, but you still had the advantage of doing the test and knowing how your car is going to react to those particular tires. That eliminates one of the questions in your setup.
I'm just curious because, you know, I understand that the advantage of having an extra 4 hours and the different ways you got to set things up, and I just didn't know how long the testing was that, you know, the first part of it, and if it was still worth it. But at least you got some kind of information, some kind of feel. Might not have been the setup and you know, that you're going to run or, the, you know, test a bunch of different setups, but I just wasn't sure if it was enough that even if you wouldn't have got that practice, at least you had some time on that tire already, and that, which to me seemed like it would be an advantage over the rest of the teams, and you kind of already got a mental idea, and your driver's already got a feel, okay, this is how it felt, already got the nose down, so now you're kind of already a page ahead of everybody else. It was kind of how I was looking at it, but as you saw, we got Brandon in the studio, so I'm going to go ahead and let you get him on in here.
Good deal. This is our guest that we had scheduled for our second half hour. I apologize for our first guest not showing up, but at least you got to hear CJ and mine's opinion on the Kansas race. And if you want to hear our opinions on the Dover race coming up, we do a show on Monday nights called Rubbin' Is Racing. Tune in on that at 7 o'clock, and you'll hear us talk about the Dover weekend. But enough about that. Let's go ahead and bring in our next guest. Young man running in the bomber division, and he's got some plans to move up very soon. So, Brandon Martin, how you doing tonight, bud?
I'm doing just fine. How about yourself?
Finer than hen's teeth tonight. How's your season been going so far?
So far, so good. We've had a normal racing season. We've had our ups. We have our downs. We've been fighting the car the last couple weeks, but, you know, the car's slowly getting better and better, and now we're getting into a point where we're starting to fix some of the bigger issues that we've been having. I think once we get these rear end issues worked out, we're gonna have a pretty fast race car.
Well, there you go. And I understand you're planning on moving up from the bomber division. What's going on there?
Yeah, you know, when we first started this, it was kind of one of those, I was getting in just for something to do after football, and we wanted to have a little bit of fun with it. Lord knows my competitive attitude didn't let that happen after about two races. I decided, yeah, we're going to do this.
Yeah.
So I think we've been kind of talking about a truck here and there. Really, it's been about Dylan. For the most part, making sure he gets his sponsorships. But now that his late model, his super late model is done and we're selling it, we're going to take that and use that money to build a pro truck to run over here in Florida and all around the state.
Well, that sounds pretty interesting. Glad to hear you building a pro truck. That's definitely a step up. And what are your goals? How far up do you want to step up in racing?
You know, honestly, I think trucks is about as far as we want to go. I mean, obviously, if the opportunity presents itself, like I said, I'm a rather competitive person. I'll never turn a competition down. But I think trucks is pretty much where we want to stay. It's kind of when we decided to get back into it, we had our options. You know, we could always go super racing because we had one. But we also had the truck option in sportsman. I think we went with the trucks just because it seems more of a family for us. That's what Dylan ran as he kind of first started his big racing career, and that's where we made our friends, and I think that's where we fit best. So that's where we're going to go, and I think that's where we're going to stay for a while.
I'm kind of surprised. I would have thought you would want to move up to super late models like Dylan runs and, you know, use him as a source of advice and everything to run those cars. But I understand what you're saying, too. It's great that you keep it in a family atmosphere and everything. So, you know, you'll be comfortable where you're at, and that's great. I think that's a good idea. Who in your family is involved in your racing?
For us, racing's a family affair. We really started Dylan originally did, like I said, he did the trucks, and everybody started getting into it then. And since Dylan's gone up and away, the dynamics changed a little bit, and everybody loves to watch him race. But now they kind of wanted something still here. So my whole family gets along. We all like to come out to the track. My sister's our official photographer. My dad and my mother are my main sponsors. We own a business, Blackboard Integration, down here in Florida, and they sponsor me for the most part. And Dylan, we call Dylan my virtual crew chief. Anytime I get stuck at the track and I have no idea what to do, I can normally ring him unless he's behind the wheel too, and he'll give me some advice on what to do with the car or where I'm going wrong.
That's a cool deal to have. I know exactly what you're talking about. My dad and Junie Donlevy were very close friends, and I knew Junie for 50 years, ever since I was 6 years old. I mean, so we were close, to say the least. And if I had a problem at the track, I couldn't get my car to handle, I could call Junie from the track and tell him pretty much my basic setup and what the car was doing, and Junie would tell me, well, change this or do this. So, yeah, that's a great thing to have, to be able to have somebody give you a different idea or a different outlook at a problem you've got right there while you're at the track. For people who don't know, we've mentioned Dylan a couple times. Just give us a brief rundown on who exactly Dylan is.
Yeah, so Dylan is my little brother. I just turned 18 back in October, and he is now running NASCAR and ARCA. He just lately moved up from super late models here in Florida, and he's moved up to North Carolina. He's running for Empire Racing and Richard Petty Motorsports. He's a development driver for Richard Petty. Actually, this week he has a NASCAR late model stock race he's going to be running. I think it's in Greensboro. But he's starting to move up the ranks. We're starting to look at a full-time truck ride for him, hopefully for next year. We'll see how, you know, sponsorships line up and all that. But yeah, he just moved up. He's having a blast. He's working for Empire as well. I think he's one of the very few drivers that not only does he have to drive the car, but he also works on the car during the week. So if he breaks it, he's the one that fixes it. Gives me a great advantage because, you know, he came down probably, I'd say, about 2 weeks ago and spent maybe 15, 20 minutes with my car. And when I went to the track the next time, my lap time's picked up by 2 tenths. So I love the fact that he's learning, he's working on cars, and he gets to drive them too. So he's in a rather unique spot.
Yeah, he's got a pretty good deal going there, and that's good that he can help you out like that. Both of you gain knowledge. Do you work on your car yourself, or do you have other people that come in during the week?
For the most part, I work on my own car. I'm still learning. I will say I've learned a lot about cars in the last year while I've had this. And I have some people that really helped me out. Dylan's one of them. And then Dave Culpert with Service On Site over in Lakeland. He's a good friend of ours. He runs Sportsman's down here, and he helps me a ton. Same thing with Chad Pierce, Dylan's old crew chief. Anytime I need advice, I know that there's people that I can call in the racing community, be it Dave, Chad, Mike Rudolph with Michael Rudolph Performance, or Dylan. And they all help me out, tell me I'm being stupid if I am, and tell me which way I need to go.
That's cool. I got to ask you this. My producer, Jason, I'm sorry, Mr. CJ Sports, you've been on his show before on 110 Nation Sports Radio Network, so I know you know who he is. But anyway, he sent me a message and wanted me to ask you about your most embarrassing moment while you're racing.
Oh, Lord. How did that end up coming up? I hear him laughing in the background. How am I not surprised that ended up coming up? Well, I'll tell you what, it has officially changed.
Oh!
This last week, I will say, might have been the most embarrassing moment in racing. It was a rather frustrating time. We've been fighting this rear end that we've had on this car, I'd say, for a solid month now. And most of it has been my stubbornness of, I'm going to do it, and I don't need anybody's help, even though I have no idea what I'm doing. You know, yeah, that's kind of where this started from. And now all of my rear ends are actually sitting at Dave Culpert's shop, and he's getting them done for me. But in this last race, we had probably spent 2-3 weeks trying to get this rear end put back together, and we finally thought we had it done. We go out, and in the first practice, I think I went maybe 5 laps, and I blew the rear seal. And I was all pissy about it, and I'm like, okay, I guess our night's over. And Mike Rudolph comes over to me and goes, no. Nope, you worked too hard on this. I got an idea. Mike made a new rear seal. And our new axle tube seal, rather than being an actual, you know, seal from race car or advanced auto parts, something like that, he brought over a pool noodle.
A what?
Looking me with a straight, a pool noodle, like a floaty pool noodle. Looked at me with a straight face and said, stick this in your rear end and put the axle in it, act right through the middle, and that's going to be your seal. I just looked at it and I went, I mean, if you think it's going to work, I guess we'll go with it. So we did it. Funny thing, and I think this is the embarrassing part. That side worked. The other side blew up in the race.
Damn.
I think we were maybe 10 laps into the race, and my left side came apart, and there was a tire rolling down the track with an axle attached to it, and it was all kinds of bad. They hooked me up, dragged me down the front stretch, and I couldn't figure out. I'm like, oh, my, I knew that noodle wouldn't hold up. I get out the car, and the side with the pool noodle is still perfectly intact, and the other side is tore to shreds.
That's pretty amazing. The question on my mind is, well, where the hell do you get a pool noodle from at the racetrack?
You would be shocked at how many people use that. We use it for roll bar padding.
Oh, really?
Hey, there's a roll bar that's too close. That is really cheap roll bar padding. Works like a charm.
Yeah.
So that's what they
you
used
can get
it for.
In colors,
and you have an
too.
Extra one. You know, you can get it in pretty colors. You can match your car. Yeah.
Now, that doesn't get you out of the story you told me. You got to still tell them the other story as well now, Brennan.
Oh, see, I tried so hard. Is this the one where the tire came off? Okay. I guess I don't have a choice. So we're riding out in Bronson, and I'm gonna get you for this later. We're riding out in Bronson, and Dylan's there, and he's been working on the car with me, and everything's going real good. And I'd say it was probably 10, 15 laps into the race when I lost my tire. I lost my left rear tire, snapped around, all kinds of fun stuff. You know, just
Jesus,
funny race.
Who are you?
Right? Oh, yeah. That car snapped around so fast, I didn't know what to do with myself. But that's not the bad part. Nope, it gets worse. So I'm sitting there with no tire on the infield, car's facing backwards. I'm mad. Once I get mad, I tend to lose my brain. So I didn't realize that the tire had came off. I thought it was flat. This was my first time ever having a tire do this. I'd never had a flat tire. So I'm thinking, okay, the tire's flat. I drove from turn 2 all the way across the infield to the turn 4 wall to get out of the gate on a brake drum. Everybody's standing up, waving across. Stop! No, don't do it! Don't do it! And I'm just mad, so I don't care, and I'm going in no matter what. I get there, and Dylan looks at me. Dylan looks at me cross-eyed, like, "What are you doing?" I said, "Coming in, change my tire." He goes, "Dude, you don't have a tire."
Didn't dawn on you that you gained a ton of stagger all of a sudden to loosen the car?
You know,
up?
Hindsight 2020. I told you, once I get mad, my brain goes somewhere else. So my brain was off in La La Land at the moment. I was getting my tire changed. We were going cold trickle.
Damn. That's pretty cool, I gotta tell you. And I know how you are about getting mad and everything. I'm the same way. That was the one bad thing or drawback to me being a crew chief and a car owner was I was so damn intense on winning that I just blocked everything out, didn't care. I mean, and get me mad and, shit, Katie
yeah.
Barred the door then.
I can say I am the same way. I think, you know, a lot of people, I mean, I say people understand when they're into the sport, but a lot of people not in the sport don't quite understand the time and the effort that it takes to do these kinds of things. And I was talking with Dylan about it because we've been working on keeping me calm and we're getting a lot better with it. But Dylan told me the other day, he goes, "It's okay to get mad. Just don't do anything dumb."
Yeah.
We're working on the do the dumb stuff part.
Yeah, that always helps. Some more great advice from Dylan.
I'm telling you, he's a wise little kid.
Yeah, he definitely is. Excuse me. That cheesecake was a little rich. So, how's the truck coming along? And are you doing all the work on it? You hanging the body and everything, or is this pretty much one you've bought that's already been run?
The truck has not been quite started yet. We're still working on all the details with the guy that's going to be building it for us. But we are having it built with the bombers. I can say that if I screw something up on the bomber, it's kind of funny. It's not really funny when I screw something up on a truck. So
yeah.
Yeah, a little different price tag on those. We're having that truck built, and it's gonna be. I can't wait. It's gonna be absolutely incredible. We've talked about doing it brand new from the top to the bottom. Dylan's gonna have a lot of the options on everything. So you know, when it's done, it's gonna be done right. And the guy that's building it for us is the same guy that did our last truck and then worked on Dylan's Super. So we know it's gonna be good. It's gonna be right and. Can't wait to get going.
Well, there you go. It's always, to me, it's always better to start from scratch and just build your own race car. Instead, you know, I've always been opposed to buying something used because you never know, and there's no way to tell if you're buying somebody else's problems. There's a reason they're selling that race car, and they can tell you it's all we're getting a new one or all we're moving up and all this, but there's a reason there that that's being sold. So I've never dealt with buying used vehicles, but I've had guys that I know racing have and then have found out later, you know, they didn't get exactly what they thought they were going to pay for. You told me earlier you do the majority of the work on the bomber car. Do you find that helps you as a driver knowing your car from end to end since you work on it and everything? Is that an advantage to you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it helps me, and I think Dylan would say the same thing for the cars that he's working on too. Knowing the car that you're driving is definitely a positive. You can feel different things in the car. You know what you've got perfect and what you have kind of rigged up for that particular race, hoping it's going to work.
Yeah.
And it gives you a better understanding of what exactly you're driving. You know, I think something you kind of hit on about when you're buying another car, I think that goes the same thing for driving it. If you're driving a car and you don't know what's underneath you, then you're not really sure what you're feeling or what what the sensations that you're having are. You just know that there's a vibration. But yeah, I think working on the car has definitely been a huge help for me, especially because, I mean, I was pretty new to the whole thing. So it's not only taught me a lot as far as what the car feels like, but it's taught me a lot about the car in general. So I can have intelligent conversations when I'm talking to Dylan over the phone or talking to a crew chief, that I'm not just saying, well, the car's butt scooting around. Now I know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I know what you mean in there, because it's hard. If you're in something that you don't know, you know, it's hard to accurately describe, you know, what the car is doing, and, you know, trying to help your crew chief out, figure out how to make the car better. And you have to take steps to get through this process with your crew chief. And like you said, you've had to learn a lot doing everything pretty much by yourself. And the more you learn, the easier it is to communicate with Dylan or another crew chief or something and to get better advice. Back in the day, I had Timothy Peters as a driver, and he was 15 and had come from Legend cars to late model stock cars. And that was one of the things. Timothy was kind of like Cole Trickle. He didn't exactly know how to convey the car being loose, car being tight, and what part of the corner and everything. So I just kind of simplified it for him and just told him, you know, just tell me what the car is doing. You know, is it turning too much when you go in the corner? You know, is it turning enough in the center of the corner? So you kind of work out a way to communicate, and you learn as you go. And Timothy's a whiz now. He's pretty sharp chassis man. He does a lot of that on his truck, and it's a good way to learn, and evidently it pays off. Back to your family, you said your mom and dad are pretty much there at the races and all that. Is your mom one of those that sits up in the hauler with her hands over her eyes and kind of peeking through the cracks while you race? Because she doesn't really want to see if something bad happens or you wreck or something like that. Or is she one of those that somebody puts a wheel mark on your car? Well, she's down here at the pit box ready to snatch him off and smack around a little bit. Which type is your mom?
I'm going to go with the happy middle. mom grew up with me. I played football for 17 years. So to her, I'm safer in a race car. If you ask her about it, she says she'd much rather watch me and Dylan race because she knows we're strapped in and we have a roll cage, whereas if I'm in football, she has to watch me hit people like an idiot. My mom, she's never minded watching the races. She loves going out. If she's not at Dylan's races, she's at mine. They're on their way up right now to South Carolina to go meet him for his race this weekend. My wife, on the other hand, she hates it. She's one of those that she wants to cover her eyes and, hey, tell me how you do afterwards. And I'll give it to her. She goes and she shows up and she watches. But she is the opposite of my mother, where she'd rather see me play football than ever drive another race again.
Now, I have an off-the-wall question. It was back to kind of what you were talking about a minute ago. The reason I chuckled is I've been part of some rig-up jobs myself, and, you know, they weren't involved in race cars, so I've kind of chuckling because I'm kind of wondering what kind of rig jobs are going on to get the car through that weekend's race. But is it sometimes better not to know at the same time because you know what kind of rig job you did so you could be out there that weekend? is sometimes that a better not to know scenario?
That depends who's paying for the car. If you're the one paying for the car, then, yeah, I want to know, because if I feel it start to go bad, then I'll pull off the track. But if I'm not the one paying for the car, man, don't tell me. I'm going to run it to the dies.
Just let you run and run it till it dies.
Yeah, exactly.
You talk about doing on-track repairs and jury-rigging things and stuff. That was one thing I was always prepared for. I'd have JB Weld and three or four types of silicone-based glues.
Uh-huh.
We might have 100 different kinds of glues on the truck. So if anything broke and I had to rig it up, you know, I was prepared.
Hey,
I could, best I could. And get me through for one race. That's all I need.
Yep. Yeah, I'd much rather drive on a pool noodle and silicone than not drive at all.
I like that pool noodle idea. I've got to remember that. What color was it?
It was actually pink. The driver that I took it from, her car is pink and purple, and she had pink roll bar padding. So I had a pink pool noodle, and it held up. I will give it to him. It held up. That is not the side that broke.
Oh, well. Well, you didn't have a flash of pink back there, so I guess that's cool. What colors are your race cars?
Black, mixed with a little bit of black, and if we really want to switch it up, we'll throw some black in there. My race team's black and red. All of our cars, our solid colors are black, and you know, me and Dylan both have red and orange.
What number do you run, and how did you come up with that?
So the number that I run is 53. That is my football number that I played with.
Oh, yeah.
The number was actually given to me in high school when I joined the Lakeland Dreadnoughts in high school football. The only number that was left was 53. And at first I hated it, but I was the only freshman on the varsity team. I take that back. There was one other. But I was one of two freshmen on the varsity team. We won a national title that year, won state. And I kind of said, you know what, maybe this number's lucky. And I stuck with it after that.
That's weird. Because when I was playing high school football, my number was 54. And the reason I chose that number is because you could read it from the top of the stands. I mean, if you had something like a 6, you know, well, from far away, a 6 might look like an 8. I wanted people to know who I was.
I will tell you this. They had no problem knowing who I was on the football field.
Well, tell us about some of your exploits on the football field.
Oh, Lord, this is a G-rated show, right?
Nobody else is listening.
No, we've definitely had some fun. I played middle linebacker for my first 2 years. I blew up my knee, got fat, slowed down, and they moved me to a defensive line, and then a spot opened up at center, and I played center my senior year. My senior year, I was all-state, all-county, and I ended up going to play for Geneva College over in Pennsylvania. It's about an hour north of Pittsburgh. Played there for all 4 years as a center. Was a two-time All-American and a three-time All-Conference. A four-year starter there, too. That was definitely a fun time. But, yeah, we've had some good times, had some not-so-good times, but I think that's the name of the game.
Yeah, and this is getting too coincidental for me. I was a middle linebacker when I was in high school. FYI.
There you go.
I tell you, we got more in common than we think. Well, while we got a minute here, give a shout-out to anybody you want to, your sponsors, your family, your shop dog, whoever.
Take your time
and recognize some of the people you want to.
I always want to give a shout-out to my sponsors. AMSOIL has been huge for us. They let us get everything that we need at cost. And obviously, you know, you go through a lot of oil added and stuff like that. So big shout-out to those guys. Blackwater Integration, my mom and dad, actually the same people. They've been extremely helpful. They sponsor me as far as monetary goes, and then they let me use their shop for free, trailer for free, and everything like that. So they've
Ooh.
Been an absolute huge help. I wouldn't be where I am without them for sure. Big thanks to Dylan. Dylan Martin's my brother. Y'all can find him on Dylan Martin Racing, LLC, or dylanmartinracing.com. Good luck this weekend. I wish I could be there, but I'll be strapped behind the wheel too. And big thanks to Dave Culprit, Chad Pierce. Those are both the guys that are really helping me out with the car. Mike Rudolph's been helping me a lot as well. And my wife, Jamie, for actually putting up with me and letting me do this crazy thing.
That's cool. That's something, you know, you mentioned you had sponsors, you know, where you kind of barter system, trade stuff out. They help you out, you know, with the shop and everything. And I think that's what a lot of people lose sight of that when they're trying to get a sponsor. A sponsor is not necessarily, you know, giving you money. If they can give you something else that you normally have to buy, you know, you're saving that money. So on paper, you know, you're getting the same end result, just a different way. And that's the way, you know, that's the way I always worked. I had one of my sponsors was Big Boys Truck Stop, a big truck stop down near Kenley, near Southern National Motorsports Park. There we go. And he was one of my sponsors, and I didn't get any cash from him. But every race, he would fill my coolers up with ice and water, ice water in one of them. He'd give me 6 or 8 12 packs of soda to have at the racetrack, and he'd give me a tank of diesel fuel for the tow, for my hauler, you know. So I didn't get any money from him, but I saved a lot of money by the stuff that I got from him. So it all works out.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. We've got people like that as well that have really done big for us. Robert Lohr. As one of Dylan's friends on Facebook, we put out one race that we needed tires, and if we didn't get tires, we weren't going to be able to race. And Robert stepped up. He owns an aquarium shop out in Ocala, and stepped up, bought me 4 brand new tires, called me and said, "They're sitting here waiting for you. That's all you got to do." And
oh wow!
So yeah, that's people who work in trade. You're right. They don't understand that is just as good as money any day of the week because you don't have to buy that stuff.
Exactly. Let everybody know how they can keep up with you, Brandon, and follow your exploits in racing now.
Yeah, right now we just started a new Facebook page. It's called Black Sails Racing, so we're looking at hopefully making that a company soon. But you can go on Black Sails Racing on Facebook and follow all of the stuff there. We live stream our races, and then we give you updates throughout the week as to, you know, what we're doing, be it charity work or maybe working on the car or something like that. The other one is Dylan Martin Racing. You can follow that. He likes to post stuff whenever I'm doing something on the track. They like to keep up that way, either there or on DylanMartinRacing.com. That's really the best way to follow me, or you can always go to my personal page where I'm posting some of the more funny stuff.
Well, that's cool. You're also in my group, NASCAR and Other Racing, so I can keep up with what you're doing and everything. And it's been great talking to you, Brandon. I mean, I'm glad I got to meet you, and I'm glad I got to talk with you. You sound like a pretty cool dude that's having a lot of fun doing what he's doing, and that's great. I mean, if you could race with a smile on your face, that's the ultimate to me. But thanks again for coming on, and good luck to you for the 2016 season. Tell Dylan good luck for what he's doing. Sounds like he's got his game plan going, and he's moving on up. I wish him well. And one more time, thanks again for coming on, bud.
Awesome. Thank you very much for having me. It's always fun to come talk to you guys.
Thanks, Brandon.
All right, we'll get you back on later on in the season. Or if nothing else, when you start running the truck. But we'll get you back on so we can find out how things are going.
Sounds good to me.
All right, bud. Good night.
Good night.
All right, folks. That's going to wrap it up for tonight. Let's run through our social media stuff. Go ahead, CJ. Let people know how they can keep up with what you're doing.
You guys can check out the 110 Nation on Twitter, at 110 Nation. Check us out on Facebook, 110 Nation Sports. Check out our blog site, www.110nationsports.com.
I got to make sure that I thank Fit for Life. I got to thank Snafu Seasoning, and I got to thank YellowCautionFlag.com for help make all this possible. We talk about the barter system and, you know, Snafu Seasoning, what they do for this show, barter system, what Fit for Life does for us and the whole network. You know, barter system, you know, that's what, a lot of what we've been doing as of lately, but I got to thank all those people because without them, a lot of what we've been able to do would not be accomplished. And I got to make sure I thank I-95 Sports Network for rebroadcasting our shows over there. And I got to thank everybody that's put on the great shows that they put on. So.
Yeah, definitely so. Mr. Jimmy Haywood, the man behind Snafu Seasoning, is just a great guy. Really good friend and somebody I'm glad to be associated with. If you listen in, Jimmy, give us a call in sometime. But as far as myself on social media, you can keep up with me on Twitter at Big Sweat, where they call me the NASCAR heartbreaker and home wrecker. I've usually got something to say during the week, so check that out. Facebook. I have a Facebook racing group, NASCAR and Other Racing. We talk about all different types of racing. We run group race threads where all the group's members get together and chat about the race during the race as we're watching it and everything. We do all of the top-tier series in NASCAR. We do Formula One, IndyCars, IHRA. If they're running it, and it's on television where we can talk about it, we're going to be there. The biggest thing we try to sell and the biggest thing we're proud of is we don't allow any driver bashing or any profanity or anything like that. We are definitely a family-friendly group. We have quite a few members that are under 18 years of age that are drivers and their moms and dads, so we don't want the parents to worry about what their kids are being exposed to, so we monitor that pretty close. So if intelligent and informative racing talk is what you're after, join my group, NASCAR and Other Racing. I have a blog I post every Tuesday. NASCAR Shit, Racing with Big Sweat is the name of it. And it's more of an unadulterated look at my feelings and my thoughts about the previous NASCAR weekend. So check it out Tuesday at www.racingwithbigsweat.blog.com and see what I got to say about the Dover weekend. And as always, Mr. CJ Sports and myself have a show we do on Monday nights, Rubbin' is Racing. This is broadcast on Spreaker, and it's from 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock, and that's our thoughts on what happened the previous weekend in NASCAR. So we talk about that, and we'll give you our opinions and everything. So check that out on Monday nights, and then I'm here on Thursday nights with Racing with Big Sweat. I don't have any guests lined up for next Thursday, but as soon as I do, there'll be show flyers posted and you can make plans to attend. And that's going to do it for tonight, people. Thank you very much for tuning in. Hope you tune in next week and hope you have a good week this week. See ya.